Author Dan Simpson, in his book, The Gift of Time, writes this. Imagine there's a bank that credits your account each morning with $86,400. It carries over no balance from day to day. Every evening, it deletes whatever part of the balance you failed to use during the day. What would you do? I'd find something to spend $86,400 on every day if I could, right? And then he goes on, each one of us has such a bank. Its name is time. Each morning it credits you with 86,400 seconds. Every night it writes it off as lost, whatever of this you have failed to invest to good purpose. It carries over no balance. It allows no overdraft. Each day it opens a new account for you. Each night it burns the remains of that day. If you fail to use the day's deposit, the loss is yours. There's no going back. There's no drawing against tomorrow. You must live in the present on today's deposits. Invest it so as to get from it the utmost in health, happiness, and success. The clock is running out. Make the most of today. And then he goes on to say, to realize the value of 1 year, ask a student who failed a grade. To realize the value of 1 month, ask a mother who gave birth to a premature baby. To realize the value of 1 week, ask the editor of a weekly newspaper. To realize the value of 1 hour, ask dear friends who are waiting to meet. To realize the value of 1 minute, ask a person who missed the train. To realize the value of 1 second, ask a person who just avoided an accident. To realize the value of 1 millisecond, ask the person who won or who lost a medal in the Olympics. Treasure every moment that you have, and treasure it more because you shared it with someone special, special enough to spend your time. And remember that time waits for no one. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is mystery. Today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. You know, while I read that, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? We need to value every second we have because one day there will be no more. That's one thing we can count on as humans. One day there will be no more of those seconds and minutes and hours. But do we take it to heart? Do we learn from them? I mean, how much control over our lives do we really have anyway? Consider these facts. Over the course of your lifetime, you'll spend at least 5 years waiting in line, 2 years just trying to get in touch with people by phone or email. You can also look forward to spending 8 months opening nothing but junk mail or spam. Sometimes it seems like that every day, doesn't it? 6 months staring at traffic lights that refuse to turn green. In fact, if in order to get to work, your time behind the wheel averages 60 minutes a day, you'll spend 6 40-hour work weeks just getting yourself to and from work. Think of all those wasted seconds and minutes and hours, right? What do you do when you're sitting there at the light that will not, and there's a couple in Bellevue, that will not turn green no matter how long you sit there and wait, right? Think about how much water has passed under the bridge while we have to just sit there and do nothing, then race to the next light hoping you're going to make it before it turns red and do it all over again. Just hurry up and wait. That's driving down 370 at about 8:15, 8:30 in the morning. Hit the next light and wait. Hit the next light and wait, right? And we're not the only ones who have to hurry up and wait. Moses had to do that up there on the mountain. If you listen to Linda as she read the story, hurry up and wait to talk with God. And Peter, James, and John, today we celebrate Transfiguration Sunday, Jesus on the mountaintop. Peter, James, and John had to do the same thing with Jesus up there. Hurry and wait until something important happens. So what do you do with yourself while you're enduring that daily grind and the toll it takes on your soul and your sanity when those daily tests reveal just how faithful you are? You know, a tremendous amount of life is just waiting, isn't it? We can't eliminate the waiting. It's as if we say, it is what it is, right? A light takes so long to change. It takes so long for someone to get back to you about something or give you something you need at work. But we can change how we look at wasted time. Being faithful when nothing much seems to be happening is what it means to keep the faith. Now, being a patient and mellow guy, y'all know me too well at this point. When I think my time is being wasted, I feel uniquely qualified to preach on this subject. Not. But let's look at someone who knew how to hurry up and wait. And that was good old Moses. He's an unexpected and unlikely example of endurance and patience. Unexpected and unlikely because if any biblical figure can claim to have lived a life filled with divine intervention, it was good old Moses. Here's a man to whom God appeared and spoke in no uncertain terms, face to face. Here was a leader who could call on God to rain curses down on his enemies and perform great acts of deliverance for his people. Here was a person who had experienced a life of privilege in Pharaoh's household, then a life of hardship and rejection in the desert, and then a life of power and respect as the God-appointed leader of the Israelites as they moved out of bondage in Egypt towards the promised land. Moses just isn't the first person that comes to my mind when I think about someone finding ways to fill time when God doesn't seem to want to show up or when nothing happens. He's definitely my first. But in today's text, that's exactly what happens. As the leader of a stiff-necked people, as God refers to the Israelites, Moses already knew what a handful they could be. They looked up to Moses sometimes for inspiration, for guidance and leadership, but with typical human perversity, they were also watching to see how long Moses would be gone. Kids, you know you do this too with your parents, just in case they might want to engage in a little idolatry on the side while Moses is out of town. You know, while the cat's away, the mice will play. So off on a hike, Moses goes, telling the priests and leaders that God requires him to continue up to the top alone of Mount Sinai for his meeting with God. And he walks away, leaving his brother Aaron in charge. And how that turned out, my friends, is another story in their waiting for another day. So imagine Moses' thoughts and his mood when, after dropping everything and running up Mount Sinai, followed by the arrival of this mysterious cloud or fog or whatever it is on the mountaintop, imagine Moses' mood after running up Mount Sinai when he gets to experience 6 days. Count it, 6 days of absolutely nothing. Camped on top of Mount Sinai, engulfed in a cloud, he doesn't even have a view to take his mind off of his 6 days of waiting. Talk about hurry up and wait. How different the Exodus story would have turned out if instead of sticking it out for 6 long, lonely, boring days in a cloud, Moses had given up in disgust after day 4 or 5. Heck, I'd last about 20 minutes, tops. God, you called me here. Where the heck are you? All right, I'll give you 20 minutes, but after that, I'm back down the mountain. Despite the hardship, the thick clouds, and the sense that he was encamped at the edge of this devouring fire, Moses stuck it out and endured. He was close enough to God at this point to know that things only happen on God's time and not ours. Have you all figured that out about God yet? That God works in God's time and not on your clock? With God, that's just the way it is. And Moses had already accepted that fact, that if he wanted to hear God's voice, he had to be willing to wait. Because you know what? Sometimes when you least expect it, nothing happens. Absolutely nothing. And as the cloud of God's glory continued to sock in that mountaintop and enfold him in silence, he was faced with the problem of how to fill his days while he waited for God. For 6 long days, God was silent. It sure does make me wonder what Moses did up there, doesn't it, in a cloud bank for 6 days? Could you do it? Wait 6 days? How would you handle it? And you can't have your cell phone with you, by the way, playing Candy Crush or that fish game or whatever either. How do you do it? How do you handle life when nothing happens? How do you fill those hard-to-endure dry spells that choke your days? How do you keep faith when God seems to be keeping secrets instead of keeping promises? God's directives to all of us, leaders or followers, powerful or humble, self-assured or shaking in our boots, is that we need to respond in three ways. Yes, it's a sermon, 3 points, right? That's the standard. We can try praying. Why? Well, just because God seems to be silent doesn't mean that we have to keep silent. One of the greatest comforts and privileges that we enjoy as God's children is the ability to come to God in prayer at any time, any place. Caught in traffic, doing hard time in the doctor's waiting room, instead of punching every button on your radio or reaching for your cell phone and playing all those games, what if you use that moment to pray? I mean, after all, does anyone really need another Sam Smith song after all? Or one more game of Candy Crush? Turn it off and think about that list of people you said you would pray for. Who says when someone tells you what's going on with them or a friend, I'll keep you in my prayers? We all say it, right? What if we kept our word and held them up to God, even and especially when God is silent? You got a lot of traffic lights down 370. Think of how many people you could lift up to God at each one of those red lights. What if you took every opportunity where you had to wait for someone or something to lift up to God your deepest fears or longings or dreams for God to hear? Don't pray just to get an answer. Pray because it's the only answer we have to get. Jeffrey Imbach says, prayer is essentially the expression of our heart longing for love. It's not so much the listing of our requests, but the breathing of our own deepest request to be united with God as fully as possible. Number two, we could try thanking. When plans and programs that we've counted on seem to stall out or unravel, and we have nothing but time on our hands, it's hard to recall that everywhere and at all times, God is deserving of our praise. You say, thank God, during those times when our jobs are kind of and our dreams are dragging, and nothing's happening, right? Like that's going to do anything, right? It does. The very fact of thanksgiving may be like avoiding the things that are wrong in our lives, but moping on the negatives is even worse. As a moper on the negatives, I feel uniquely qualified to tell you that. Because then all we think about is that there's nothing good in us or nothing good in our lives. And nothing could be further from the truth. Think about the things that we are thankful for in our lives, and you begin to focus on the thankless things or focus less on the things that seem thankless in your life. When we remember and rejoice in the many reasons that we should be praising God, our outlook changes, and that changes our lives. And the fruit that comes from thankfulness is joy. And joy does not make much room for the bad stuff. Praising God primes our pumps and prepares us to hear the words that will come in God's time. And three, we can try enduring. Even when nothing happens, or worse yet, when nothing good happens, that doesn't mean that we have carte blanche to fold our tents and go home. Because God's calendar is the only one that matters and not ours. And none of us are privy to God's pages or get to edit it to our liking. When in doubt, learn to embrace the uncertainty. I read that somewhere, right? Like I can ever do that, embrace the uncertainty, right? But in all seriousness, it is a necessary part of our faith life. Notice that Moses had to step into the cloud to experience the reality of God's presence. He had to enter into and embrace the cloud, literally fog on top of the mountain. He had to enter the fogginess of uncertainty to find his way to God. And when we're going through a period of confusion or disorientation or fogginess in our lives, it could be that we're precisely where we need to be and that we're exactly where God is as well. Where did Moses encounter God? In the fog. Moses was in a fog for 6 days, but so was God. Now, for some of us, it might seem like 6 years, but God has promised to be in that fog with us, and there he was. Endure. Remember Moses, nothing but cloud and silence for 6 days. But after that, that's when the real fun began. Sometimes, when you least expect it, nothing happens. Enjoy it. Savor it. And get ready for some real fun next. Because God is good at that. Both the waiting and the fun that comes afterwards. Just ask Moses. Amen.